So when you were singing there, or rather Nikki was reading Psalm 30, I really felt personally, and maybe some of others of us did as well, just sense of the Lord underlining that line about weeping may last for a night, but rejoicing comes in the morning. And I was just thinking, the thing that is in front of us all, you know, it's the open door of heaven, and there is rejoicing there, and it's just incredible. As we step out of the constraints of this life and some of the troubles, as well as the blessings of this life, we step into eternity, and he's there waiting for us, and it is going to be good. It is going to be so good. Years ago, I took a picture of an open door. It was in France, actually. You probably can't see it very well from where you are, but it was just this door opened. I was inside this old church, and the door was ajar, and the light was flooding in. And it's just such a fabulous picture for me of the door into eternity and the light stepping out of the dreariness, as it were, of this life. And I'm such a sad person that I put it on the front of my Bible and the back. So the idea is that, you know, whenever I open this, you know, whether it's front or back, I'm getting into the light. But I felt that, and maybe that's encouragement for different ones of us as well, that there's something fantastic in front of us all. So maybe you'd like to turn to 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 8, which you will probably find, if you need it, on page 374 of the Church Bible. 2 Kings 6, verse 8. And I have to confess that my cousin Brian has been quite silent of late, so there's no jokes from Brian tonight. Apologies. He's got great fame in this church, I know, but not tonight. What I want to do, really, is to read this passage and, in essence, to ask us what we are seeing, because this is all about seeing things that are there but are somehow hidden from us, so to ask us what we're seeing. And I want to give a little bit of personal testimony as well, and for us to focus our whole perception on Jesus, who is the one that we want to see. And at the end, we'll have a chance just to pause in God's presence and just see if he is showing us anything or speaking to us about anything as well. So that's the plan. But let's read this. So 2 Kings 6, verse 8. Curious episode, and it seems like Elijah's life was full of them. Amazing events going on. Now, the king of Aram was at war with Israel. After conferring with his officers, he said, "I'll set up my camp in such and such a place." The man of God sent word to the king of Israel, "Beware of passing that place, because the Arameans are going down there." So the king of Israel checked on the place indicated by the man of God. Time and again, Elisha warned the king so that he was on his guard in such places. This enraged the king of Aram. He wasn't happy about this. He summoned his officers and demanded of them, "Will you not tell me which of us is on the side of the king of Israel? Who is the mole here?" "None of us, my lord the king," said one of his officers. "But Elisha the prophet, who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the very words you speak in your bedroom." "Go and find out where he is," the king ordered, "so that I can send men and capture him." The report came back, "He's in Dothan." Then he sent horses and chariots and a strong force there. They went by night and surrounded the city. When the servant of the man of God got up and went out early the next morning, an army with horses and chariots had surrounded the city. "Oh, my lord, what should we do?" the servant asked. "Don't be afraid," the prophet answered. "Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." Just underline that. "Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And Elisha prayed, "O Lord, open his eyes so that he may see." Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked and saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. As the enemy came down towards him, Elisha prayed to the Lord, "Strike these people with blindness." So he struck them with blindness, as Elisha had asked. Elisha told them, "This is not the road, and this is not the city. Follow me, and I'll lead you to the man you are looking for." And he led them to Samaria. After they entered the city, Elisha said, "Lord, open the eyes of these men so that they can see." And the Lord opened their eyes, and they looked, and there they were inside Samaria. When the king of Israel saw them, he asked Elisha, "Shall I kill them, my father? Shall I kill them?" "Do not kill them," he answered. "Would you kill men you have captured with your own sword or bow? Set food and water before them so that they may eat and drink and then go back to their master." So he prepared a great feast for them. And after they'd finished eating and drinking, he sent them away and they returned to their master. So the bands from Aaron stopped raiding Israel's territory. Amazing. If only all conflicts in the world could be resolved like that. But what a fascinating episode it is. These Aramean bands were after the king of Israel, and there always kind of friction and war between the two there, and so they were raiding, but they really had it in for the king of Israel. And Elisha kept tipping off the king of Israel. He just kept letting him know, "Don't go there, don't go to that town, don't go to that village. Watch out from the east side of that mountain," whatever. And the Arameans were just absolutely frustrated about what was going on here. And then the king of Aram, as we read there, this verse 11, this enraged the king of Aram. And he said, "Okay, which one of you is giving the game away? Who is the mole here? Who is doing this?" And somehow or other they had heard that it was Elisha who was doing it. And they say, it's fascinating, the phrase that they use. They say, "But Elisha, the prophet, who's in Israel, tells the king of Israel the very words you speak in your bedroom." So the king of Aram had a really good idea. And he said out loud, "Well, let's go and get Elisha." So it might just as well have been, did you get that, Elisha? They're after you now. It's really funny, actually, when you think of it, isn't it? I really saw that the humor in this and the joke in it, you know, that if Elisha was hearing everything that was going on and then said, "Well, let's get him," that too was told to Elisha. So anyway, the amazing thing, I was just thinking about this as I was walking up here tonight, the amazing thing is that Elisha doesn't run. They're after him now, but he doesn't run, he stays there. And he's in whichever town it is, and they get up in the morning, and Elisha's servant is petrified with what's happening, because he sees that, you know, the whole town is surrounded by these Aramean soldiers and chariots and so on. And Elisha, such a cool character, he says, "Don't be afraid." Well, I would have been afraid, wouldn't you? But that's this classic phrase, "Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And it parallels the New Testament statement in John's Gospel, doesn't it? "He who is within you is greater than he who is within the world." And the fact that God is with us individually and corporately, and he is, you know, we're on the victory side, and we're on the winning side. Ultimately, we are on the winning side. And the fact that God is with us and his forces are there. And this was a manifestation of that in a very physical way. As to what went on. So, anyway, Elisha prayed, "Blind them." There have been occasions when I've wanted to pray that kind of thing about somebody. "Lord, blind that person." And in Elisha's case, the Lord heard and answered. So these poor Aramean soldiers were blinded or confused or whatever. And and Elisha has this ruse. He says, "No, you're in the wrong place. You've got the wrong person. Come with me, and I'll show you where you should go." And he leads them, I don't know how far it was, to Samaria and right into the city, which is the capital of Israel. And then, you know, Lord opened their eyes and they realized, they're surrounded now. And they're in the stronghold of the king of Israel. And the king of Israel says, "Right, so kill them, let's get them." And Elisha says, no. Ease off. Feed them and water them and send them back. And they prepare a great feast and they go back and problem solved. So that's the that's the story. I do see the humor in the king of Aram saying, "Well, let's get Elisha," and just the, you know, the whole fact that that is instantly beamed across to Elisha. I was in America recently, and we had a very interesting thing when we went to our daughter Ruth's church, which is in Washington D.C., because it's a great church, probably about 500 people or so, fairly new church. But anyway, we drove in. They've got an underground car park. They meet in a school, as it happens. So, and there's an underground car park because everybody's got cars in America. But there was security when we left the car and walked to the stairs to go up into where the church was meeting. And we were being frisked at the door. And they said, "There's a VIP guest." And so anyway, we didn't know what was going on. But we went in, sat down. And sure enough, there was Mike Pence, would you believe, Vice President of the USA. He was just two rows in front of me and six seats along. I had a clear line of fire, actually. But he's a good guy, apparently. It's the other one that... stop it, David. just thinking about the same kind of thing, that he turns up in different churches, but they don't know about it. They only get a phone call at 7:15 in the morning to tip them off, so we have to get things ready. But if it was being known publicly, you know, that he's going here, he's going there, then the security arrangements would be very, very different. But anyway, that was there. The Arameans were not at all pleased about this tipping off. But I just love that phrase there, that those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And then he prays that his servant would see. Open your eyes, open his eyes, Lord, that he would see. And I want to say, it wasn't that he was going to see something imaginary. He was actually going to see something that was real. But it's just that it had been obscured from his sight. So when he opened his eyes and he saw the hills full of chariots of fire all around Elisha, he wasn't kind of imagining that in some kind of ethereal sense. It was for real, but now he could see it where he hadn't seen it before. So he saw real things. And that brought, no doubt, an awful lot of encouragement to him, especially the way things worked out. So tonight it's all about how we see things. What do we see? Do we simply see in the horizontal, as it were, in the worldly sense, or do we see and perceive what is real but unseen? Paul says what is unseen is eternal. And we live in the realm of the seen, but what is unseen is eternal. But I was reading this week a... kind of working through Matthew at the moment, and I dip around a little bit. I read a bit in the Old Testament, a bit in the New Testament, and the Psalm. But going through the Sermon on the Mount, and Matthew 5, you might like to turn there, actually. Matthew 5, which is page 969. correct that to Matthew 6 on page 971. Matthew 6, 971. Matthew 6, 22. Where Jesus, he's talking, the context there, he's talking about treasures in heaven. He's saying, don't store up yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And then later he's talking about no one can serve two masters. But there's this curious thing in verse 22. It says, the eye of the lamp is the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? It's kind of curious imagery there. I admit I kind of struggled a little bit with this. Some people see that if your eye is singular, then you're kind of uncluttered and you'll be light in your body and so on. But... anyway, I read this and I kind of put a very loose understanding on it, which really helped me. And it went like this, that it's the way we see things. So the eye is the lamp of the body. So if the way we see things is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if the way we see things is bad, then your whole body will be full of darkness. And I found that really helpful, actually. If the way we see things is good, then there will be light in our body, in our lives. But if the way we see things is bad, if it's obscured, if we're looking at the wrong things and so on, then there'll be darkness in our body. Now, I find that really helpful, and I started thinking about different aspects of life. And I listed several things, and you can list your own here. But so, for example, how do you look at the day tomorrow, Mondays? You know, how are you going to view Monday? Is the way you see Monday going to be a good way that you look at it, or is it going to be a bad way you look at it? Is it going to be a dreary continuum, as it were, or is it going to hold possibilities of God at work in your life, or God using you? How do you look at your friends or your spouse? If the way you look at your friends or the way you look at your spouse is bad, then there'll be darkness in your life. But if the way you look at your friends or your spouse is good, then there'll be light in your life. It is very easy, isn't it, simply to look at the problems or the issues or the irritations, because they're kind of, we're aware of them. But if we look at those, then we're going to have problems. If we focus on those irritations or problems, then there'll be darkness in us. But if the way we look at our spouse, our friends, is good, looking at them with godly eyes, then there'll be light in our lives as a consequence. If the way we look at the opposite sex is good, then there will be light in our lives. But if the way we look at the opposite sex is bad, then there'll be darkness in our lives. It's very easy to see the opposite sex as, you know, an object of sexual gratification. But if we see them as people, as a person, then that's the right way to look at them. It's very easy just to slide into not looking at pornography, we shouldn't do that, but to end up with a kind of pornographic view of the opposite sex. So we need to be careful. So it's the way we look at things, the way we look at people. If the way you look at your life is good, then there'll be light in your life. So, you know, what about your life? You know, however many years we've got, is this a chance to serve God in our lives, or is this something just to struggle through and get to the end? So the way we look is so crucial. The way we look at conflicts, likewise. Can we see God in the day? Can we see God in the week? Can we see God in this month, in the years of our lives? So if we're looking at these things with a godly view, then there'll be light in our lives. You see where I'm going with this, don't you? It's the way we look at things. See God in the right way. I confess at times that I feel I'm the kind of dullest person spiritually, and there are people who perceive things and see things, and I don't have a clue. And I want to give a little bit of personal testimony, in which I don't look particularly good, it's got a tri-praying twist to it, but that's just very, very relevant for me. But when we returned to Edinburgh from Yorkshire about 8-9 years ago, I'd had this idea about a little booklet for non-Christians called Try Praying, and it's been written. I came to Edinburgh with an idea that this could kind of develop into some kind of church project. I went to a designer, a Christian designer, and I presented the whole idea to her, and I said, the point about this is it's for people who are not religious and don't do church. And her eyes filled with tears, and she said, this is huge. I was thinking, when she said that, it's only a booklet. A few weeks later, I went to that fabulous group of people that pray in Holyrood every week when Parliament's sitting, and they wanted to hear about Try Praying. And so I went along, Claire and I went along, told a few stories and presented it, and then they prayed, as they do, and they're very vigorous prayers, and it's fantastic. And there was somebody with a gift of prophecy there, and she said, this Try Praying thing is for the nation. And I'm thinking, it's only a booklet. And she said, actually, no, it's not for that. It's for the nations. And I thought, I am just way out of my depth here. I don't have a clue what is going on here. But the thing is, she saw, and the designer, Jane, they saw things in this which I didn't. And they were perceiving things which I was completely dull to. I want to assure you that I think I've grown to a kind of bigger vision of this now. And it is amazing to say I could spend half an hour telling you about what was going on in America the last month when I was there. But it is almost certainly going to kick off in America in a large way. Some of the connections were astounding. So you can ask me about that later. And it is in Australia, it is in New Zealand, it's even washed up in Sri Lanka, it's been translated into German. So, you know, winding back those 8 years, I just didn't have any idea about this, but others could see it. Others could see it. So I needed my eyes to be opened. And, you know, 8 years on, I can see what they were seeing. I can see these possibilities. So how do we see and how do we perceive these things? Some are more sensitive to these things than others, and that makes me feel very assured as one who doesn't see much. But the thing that we really need to focus on, and there's a great verse in Hebrews 2, you might want to turn there, Hebrews 2, verse 8 and 9, page 1202, where the writer is talking about Jesus and kind of end times things. But verse 8, he says, "In putting everything under him, God left nothing that is not subject to him. Yet at present we do not see everything subject to him." It's very helpful because we live in a world which is fallen and broken, so we do not see the kingdom of God outworked fully. We see it partially. We don't see everything subject to him. But, verse 9, "But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels, now crowned with glory and honor, because he suffered death." So we see Jesus, we perceive Jesus with the eye of faith. We perceive Jesus. So he has to be our focus in all of this. He has to be the one who guides our lives, leads our lives, and takes us into adventures with him and so on. And we want to perceive him and see him and follow him the way that he leads us. So we see Jesus. I was, I get some of you know Kenny Borthwick or know of Kenny Borthwick, and he writes a blog, and I get, sometimes he kind of writes in spurts, actually. Sometimes there's lots of things he writes on his, he's very unwell now, but sometimes he writes a lot, and sometimes it kind of goes silent for a while. But he's been writing a lot of late. And I've got this, I think it was on Thursday, which I was quite amazed about, which I read as further illustration of the idea of seeing Jesus. He was just talking about waking up early one morning this week, and everything was so still, which was after the storm, which we had this week. And he had a memory of something which he experienced many years ago when he was in North Ust at the time. So I just read it from here. It says, "I was there for a communion season at which I was about to preach at the English-speaking services. And I was in a house marked by much prayer for revival. Through the night, I woke up and became aware of such a deep presence of the Lord that it was tangible. It was beautiful, fearful, made me want to get out of bed and prostrate myself on the floor, and also dance furiously all at the same time. There was deep awe and fear in a part of my inner being I have rarely touched, but joy rising in my heart as well, a lightness of spirit. The simple thought birthed in these moments was this: this is our God, and we have waited for him. At first, I had no sense of wondering about the meaning of what was happening. The moment was there, the moment was there to be lived, survived even, whatever it led to, if anything. The Holy One of Israel was there to be worshipped. That is all. The sense was of him filling all things. From my bed, I looked out of the window. Though the Lord often speaks to me through pictures in my spirit, I've had very few vision experiences. This was one of them. against the background of complete darkness, I could see this. I was aware, the thing that I was aware of was a shape moving effortlessly among the stars. As I looked upwards, these words were birthed deep within. Who is this who rides across the heavens in the stateliness of his majesty? What I saw was the outline of a kingly figure. His robe was made of stars and planets that seemed to be drawn in the skirts of his train, of the train of that robe, as he moved onwards with unfaltering and unstoppable pace. It was as though the whole universe was magnetized to his glory, being taken at his will towards a destination to which he would one day bring all things. I have never forgotten that sight. It left me with enduring memories and thoughts. And he goes on, but I'll leave it there. But what an experience, a very rare experience. But he saw something, and it profoundly affected his life. So, come back to the main question. What are we seeing? What is it that we see? And are we looking in the right way, the way we see things? What are we seeing? I'm going to pray. I want to just give us a few moments. I've said my piece now, but I want to give us just a few moments, and I'm going to pray, and just give us all a few moments to ask God if he wants to show us anything, if there is anything that we perceive, we see or hear, which could be for you personally, it could be for this group, it could be for the church, it could be for the nation, whatever. But let's just have this time when we ask the Holy Spirit to come and just to do within us and for us anything that he would wish to do. And I'll pray, and then I'll pause afterwards, and there'll be a chance for you to share if there is anything that he said to you. So let me pray. Lord God, as we stand in your presence now, with this story of Elisha ringing in our ears, of him seeing what was real, we want to ask that you would open our eyes so that we can see what is real, that we can perceive you and hear your voice for our lives. So, Holy Spirit, draw near just now. I just give this opportunity. maybe the Lord has shown you something or said something to you, which is just for you personally, and it's not to be shared. But if there is something that anybody has that they would like to share for encouragement, then please do so. Now is the moment.